You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. As we head into a midterm election, there is concern over the potential for political violence if election results are not accepted by Trump-endorsed politicians. In the aftermath of the attack on Paul Pelosi, the husband of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, the threat for political violence is more real. A recent survey focuses on the identification of groups that may be at high risk for political violence, such as MAGA Republicans, that's short for Make America Great Again. Joining us now is Dr. Garen Wintemute, an emergency medicine physician and firearm violence researcher based at UC Davis Health, who conducted new research about the willingness to support or engage in political violence. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Wintemute.
Vicky, good morning. Thanks for having me.
You know, I'm curious, taking us right back to the beginning, was there a cascade of events that you were noticing or a specific moment that sparked this research and this survey?
There was a cascade. We, as you mentioned, do firearm violence research and had done some special research on trends during the pandemic and noted both increases in crime rates and an absolutely unprecedented surge in firearm purchasing. And as we followed that forward and started looking at why it might be happening, we discovered high levels of support for extreme positions, to the limited extent that questions had been asked for political violence, and saw the potential, if these trends converged, for real threat in the future, made contact with some experts in the field who said, oh yeah, we have trouble ahead, and decided to do a survey about it.
What was the methodology behind this research?
This is a nationwide survey, population representative, involving a professional survey research firm and a panel of people who volunteer to participate in survey research. So the findings apply right across the country. We had more than 8,500 respondents to the survey.
Yeah, and you have, as you just mentioned, you have long studied violence prevention and extended that in recent years to firearm violence. But even these findings surprised you, right?
Yes. Based on the preliminary work that we had done, I was expecting some pretty grim output, but this exceeded my worst expectations. Frankly, in particular, on the questions that had not been asked before. We repeated some questions that had been asked just to sort of benchmark our findings. But if I can give an example, one chill comes from recognizing that 20% of American adults, 30% of MAGA Republicans, as we defined them, strongly or very strongly agree with the statement that a strong leader is more important for America than having a democracy.
You know, with that question, when I was reading the study, you know, a strong leader preferred over a democracy, what went into crafting the language for that question?
So I drafted that language, actually sitting right where I'm sitting right now, and remember, a real sense of foreboding. People in prior surveys had measured attitudes and so forth, but no one had presented that direct opportunity to make a choice. And so didn't have a precedent to for guidance, decided to offer that choice and see what happened.
In conducting the research, how did you distinguish a Republican from a MAGA Republican?
This, in a sense, fell into our laps. We let current events help shape the definition. In late August and early September, President Biden gave speeches in which he talked about MAGA Republicans, and in the course of the speech sort of defined them. Republicans, of course, who voted for Donald Trump, and then the additional element, who denied the results of the 2020 election. And in our survey, the way we used that operationally was, to be considered a MAGA Republican, a person had to be a Republican by self-report, a Trump voter, again, by self-report, and had to agree strongly or very strongly with the statement that the 2020 election was stolen from Donald Trump and Joe Biden is an illegitimate president.
You also surveyed, I believe, non-MAGA Republicans and also just non-Republicans. What stood out to you about those findings when compared to the findings and results that you got from Make America Great Again Republicans?
Right. We did a general population survey, and then we were able to separate people into groups. I think what President Biden also did was suggest that MAGA Republicans were more likely than others, other Republicans, to endorse violence. But our first question was, are they really different from other Republicans? And the answer, quite honestly, was very emphatically yes. Compared to other Republicans, MAGA Republicans were substantially more likely to endorse racist positions, such as the idea that discrimination against whites is as big a problem as discrimination against people of color. They were substantially more likely to endorse delusional positions. A quarter of them endorse the core tenet of the QAnon delusion complex, which is to remind listeners, awkward though it is to hear, that America's government and social institutions are controlled by satanic pedophiles who traffic children for sex. They were also substantially more likely than others to endorse the great replacement delusion that white native born Americans are being replaced by immigrants and people of color.
One of the findings that I found just the most damning, and it was actually like the lead sentence in a LA Times article from I think this morning or earlier this week, it was roughly 5 million Americans from, and this is from your study, would be willing to kill someone to achieve a political purpose. How did you arrive at that number?
Yep. So we first asked everybody, do you support the use of violence to advance political objectives? And then I'm going to oversimplify just to make progress here. And then only if people endorsed the use of violence in the abstract for political purposes, we said, okay, how about you personally? How willing would you personally be, for example, to threaten someone, to injure someone, to kill someone? We asked those questions. We also asked people, how likely is it that you will show up in a situation where you think political violence is justified, show up with a gun, carry a gun out where people can see it, shoot somebody? And people answered those questions. And what we learned, you can take this as good news or bad news, that only a small percentage, about 2% or less, of our respondents said that they would be willing to kill somebody, that they would be willing to shoot somebody, but our 8,600 respondents represent 258 million adults in the United States. So it's roughly 2.5 million people per percentage point, which is how we get to a very rough estimate of 5 million people.
Yeah, and then you couple that with one of your survey questions about whether there would be a civil war in the near future, and the majority surveyed believe that there would be a civil war. I mean, that is a belief in and of itself, and that is one thing. But are you concerned about what this belief could translate into?
Yes. So first, just to insert a qualification, you're right that 51% of the population in general, at some level, agreed with the statement that there will be a civil war in the next few years. It fell to 20% for the people who strongly or very strongly agreed, which is where we've sort of focused our attention, and 30% for MAGA Republicans. Now, in using the term civil war, nobody is expecting trenches and artillery and groups of soldiers with different colored uniforms lining up and shooting at each other. It's a sort of sustained insurgency. And to be honest, what we're finding here reinforces work that has been done at a smaller scale by experts who've been working in this field for years, who emphasize there are organizations in this country right now preparing for war. They want to see it happen. It reinforces their view of where the United States should go. So the potential for large-scale conflict that kills and injures lots of people and puts all of society on even more on edge than it is already is really quite high.
Were you surprised? You briefly touched upon this question, but I want to read it again because, I mean, it's so blatant, the survey question, that the government, media, and financial worlds in the U.S. are controlled by a group of Satan-worshipping pedophiles who run a global child sex trafficking operation. One, what led to the language in this question? And also, were you surprised by the number of respondents who actually believe this?
Got it. So first, for listeners, that was the exact language to which our respondents, subjects were presented. We deliberately took that language verbatim from a poll that has been out in the field off repeatedly since 2021, if not earlier, and actually just issued new results within the last two or three days, because we wanted to track, and also because we wanted to see, we wanted to use existing questions as sort of a foundation for establishing validity where we were asking questions that had not been asked before. So sadly, no, I was not surprised by the responses, because we got essentially the same responses that had been given to that question before. And I have to say, our survey was conducted in May and June. The one that was released just yesterday or the day before shows support for that delusion increasing in the United States.
What does that signal to you?
It signals many things. It signals that we are, as a species, as a population, as a society, capable, many of us are capable of entertaining beliefs that are widely at variance with reality, which raises concern for me about our judgment, not any group's judgment, but our judgment as a species, frankly. But the other is this, the QAnon delusion, belief in that delusion, has repeatedly been associated with acts of violence, with mass shootings and others. So the fact that lots of people believe this raises concern, because some of those people are probably going to be willing to act on the belief, and we're back to a high level of risk of violence.
You know, I was also confused about one finding. I think it was at the bottom where it says they are not more willing to engage personally mm-hmm. in political mm-hmm. violence. That seems counter to the other findings. Can you help me understand distinguishing between the two of supporting and personally engaging?
Yes, I don't see it as counter, and I take that as one of the real pieces of good news in all of the studies that we've done from this survey. Let me go one step back. It turned out that most people reject political violence, reject violence as a means of solving problems, 2/3 or so across the board. We asked, in general, do you think it's a good idea? And regardless of what you think in general, how about each of these specific instances? Would you do it this time? Do you think it's appropriate this time? And about 2/3 of the population said no, over and over and over again. And we should take heart in that. And the second piece of good news is what you asked about. Of the people who said yes, that violence was justifiable in the abstract, the vast majority said, but I wouldn't want to be involved in it myself. That's great news, because the alternative, that lots of people would say, yeah, let's throw down and get at it, that would be really frightening. It's also the kind of news that points us toward an intervention. Other researchers have identified the steps along which people move from entertaining thoughts of violence to actually committing it. And it appears there are lots of people who are somewhere on that pathway, and there are strategies out there to change their trajectories so that they don't further mobilize toward actually committing violence.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with firearm violence researcher Dr. Garen Wintemute about his latest research about the willingness to support or engage in political violence. We're really focusing on a specific subset of Republicans, MAGA Republicans. But I'm curious, what role do you think, if any, should traditional talking points play in what we are seeing collectively in our country? Because on the one hand, we have people who vocally support and believe things like, you know, the big lie. But do you think that there is a role that elected officials and people in positions of power play in being silent or complicit, essentially allowing disinformation to play out without challenging it?
Yes. Rhetoric and silence both play huge roles here, for ill or for good. On the one hand, it's been established experimentally that, not just at the level of common sense, that violent rhetoric induces violence, can help create a climate of acceptance for violence that makes it easier for people to commit it. Support for violence, even among people who have no intent of engaging in it themselves, the group that you and I just talked about, nonetheless helps create that climate of acceptance, makes violence maybe easier for people who don't have those scruples about personal involvement. Silence is not the absence of taking a position. Silence is at best acquiescence and at worst complicity. And so to switch the point of view, rhetoric can be a huge force for change for the better. There's experimental evidence, there's real world evidence that when leaders say, no, violence is not acceptable, it's not the way we solve problems in this society, it's not the way we solve the particular problem we're discussing or problems in general, people pay attention to what their leaders say. When peers say, so let's imagine a social media situation and somebody is tweeting trash. If others say, no, this is not how we proceed in the United States, that has influence on the people who are drifting or moving toward violence. So one of the interventions that's needed is for everyone, from ordinary people like you and me and your listeners, to our elected leaders, to our unelected leaders, the people who help shape the way America thinks, to turn our backs on violence and say, no, not now and not ever. The other thing that we need to do that's similar is, and this applies mostly to regular folks like all of us, is if you see something, say something. If somebody is making a credible threat, whether it's to commit personal violence or to commit suicide, you and I have talked about this angle before, Vicky.
Yeah.
We need not to take that in silence. We need to bring that threat to somebody who can do something about it and avert tragedy.
Given everything we've talked about and all the research that you do, were you surprised by the attack on House Speaker Pelosi's husband?
No, not at all. I was saddened first. We need to remember in all of the flurry around the event that a man was seriously injured that day and that evening. And we hope he does make the projected full recovery. It was shocking. Kudos to him. As it turned out, police officers were within a few feet because of that savvy phone call that he made and able to prevent him from being beaten to death. But no, I wasn't surprised that it happened to that man on that night. Those are the accidents of circumstance. But that it happened to somebody like him at some point, no, pretty much inevitable. And that the expectation is that there will be further such events, which is why I'm spending so much of your airtime trying to convince people that they have a role in crafting the solution.
In the last 30 seconds to a minute that we have left, probably about 30 seconds, that the midterm is in just a few days, what do you want people to take away from your research and this conversation?
That violence is not acceptable, that all of us have a role to play in ending it. I hope they vote. And I hope they understand that next week is a time of very high risk, and 2024 will be another.
Dr. Wintemute, as always, thank you for the time.
A real pleasure. Thanks, Matt.
Dr. Garen Wintemute is an emergency medicine physician and firearm violence researcher based at UC Davis Health, who conducted new research about the willingness to support or engage in political violence. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.